What's up, guys? It's Jesse from Plant the Spear, and we're going to dive into this UVA game. What the heck happened in Charlottesville? Is it time to cancel the rest of the season, or was it just one game and Florida State can bounce back? So thank you for joining me. We got a lot to talk about in this episode. Look, I had a five-hour drive home from Charlottesville Saturday to sit and think about this. I was able to go back and do my rewatch yesterday on Sunday, and man, there's a lot to talk about in this game. We got some new rankings updates. We got some game time announcement to drop. Just a whole lot to get into. So thank you for joining me. Man, just... I always say I'm excited to get into these. This one might not be so much fun because we're talking about a loss, but I'm not going to be all negative in this one. We're going to try and find some positives that Florida State can build off of, you know, going forward in this game. Because you got a big one coming up on Saturday against Miami. And I'm going to tell you what, they're not going to feel sorry for you coming off a loss. You still, these games are still going to get played. The season is far from over. So we got a big one coming up on Saturday night. You guys already know we're going to be rolling out previews for that. I got a Miami pod joining me tomorrow. Me and Michael are recording our preview on Wednesday. We're going to be down there on Friday. Lots going on. But before we pass go, before we collect our $200, we have to sit back here and just let's just see what the heck happened against Virginia and what does Florida State do going forward. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, man. Got a lot to jump into it. So I appreciate you guys joining me. And without further ado, let's just jump right in. So, you know, when we talk about this, man, this UVA game, I shared with you my thoughts in the post game, the instant reaction. That was my first credentialed experience. I was in the booth and all that. That was a really great time. I just felt like there was so much going on. I just mostly shared my emotion and my immediate takeaways. But now I've had a chance to really sit down and look at things. And so I got a much better grasp. And so I want to talk about some of these things today. And it's funny because after in that instant reaction, I said that I was more disappointed than mad. I think I'm more mad than disappointed now by far, because Florida State, man, first off, credit to UVA. They played a great game. You know, they played really above their heads and went out and took the game from you because you weren't ready to take it from them. So credit to what they did. With that being said, Florida State should have won this game, man. You had so many opportunities that you squandered away. And, you know, we're gonna talk about it, both offense, defense, some overall thoughts here. And, you know, again, we're a family-friendly show, but you might want to put the kids away for the defensive segment because there's not a whole lot of nice things to say about the defense. But again, we'll find some positive in here. You know, we're not just going to sit here and trash on this team. We're still Florida State fans. We still bleed garnet and gold. It's just one game. You know, the crazy thing is, man, if you turn around and you bounce back on Saturday and you get a win against the third-ranked Miami team coming into Doak, you're going to be fine. You're going to be just where you want to be. That's easier said than done. So you have to go do it. You have to respond, and we're going to see how they do. But, man, I mean, the season is not over. So you win that game, you're right back where you need to be. So, guys, let's just go ahead and jump in. I got a bunch of notes I'm going to be referencing throughout this episode. But I think the first immediate takeaway was, like, this was like watching the Alabama game in reverse. You know, almost something where what we saw against Alabama was kind of the inverse of what we saw against Virginia. They were the more physical team. They had more energy. They looked more prepared for what was coming at them. We made a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes, something that like Alabama did that you didn't see, that some questionable things in the game plan that we did and both Alabama did. It really just felt like the opposites of each other. And unfortunately, we were on the wrong side of this one. And sometimes crazy things do happen when you go on the road. And that's where I want to start is, like, first off, man, this was our first road game, first night game. It was on a short week. Virginia's not a 100,000 seat stadium or anything like that, but they had a pretty good little crowd showing there. They were making some noise and stuff. And I think Florida State just didn't handle that well. And so if you want any proof, though, that maybe it's not just Florida State, maybe in college football, crazy things happen on the road and it's just hard to win. Well, just look at this last week's slate, right? I mean, you have number 4 LSU loses on the road to a team ranked lower than them, at least. Number 6 Oregon. I know they went into Penn State in a whiteout, but they still won in double overtime. Number 8 Florida State loses in double overtime on the road. Number 11, Indiana, beats Iowa on the road by 5 points. Well, last week at home, they beat number 9, Illinois, by 53. Iowa's not ranked. Illinois was top 10, and that Illinois team just bounced back and beat a ranked USC team this week at home. So you can obviously see the challenges of playing on the road, but it didn't stop there. Number 15, Tennessee won in overtime on the road. Number 16, Georgia Tech needed overtime to beat Wake Forest, and if it wasn't for a crazy call, probably would have lost a game they had no business being in. Number 21, USC lost on the road. Number 24, TCU lost on the road. Number 25, BYU escaped Colorado by only 3 points and was trailing early. So again, man, Florida State was a much better team at home. They played terrible on the road. And again, give credit to UVA because they're a team that is good enough this year where if you make those mistakes, they can expose some weaknesses. They can take advantage of those things and make you pay for those mistakes. But you have to, as a team, that can't be an excuse. Now, you might get one mulligan because it was your first time on the road with a new staff and a lot of new players. Remember, this coaching staff hasn't been on the road together. Again, short week. It changes your travel plans and all that type of stuff. That can't be an excuse because you have some games against teams and environments that will beat you if you play like you did on Friday night. You still got to go to Death Valley. You still got to go to Carter-Finley. You still have to go to the Swamp. Now, those teams aren't any better than Virginia right now, but the environments aren't going to be easy. So you can't use that as an excuse, man. You have to go up there and be able to play on the road. But the thing is, man, this team did so many uncharacteristic things on Friday night that we had not seen from them in the first three games, that we had not seen from them against Alabama. You know, you can get away with making mistakes against a team like East Texas A&M or Kent State, but you didn't really do that against Alabama. So now it's kind of like, which was the real Florida State team? You know, I talked about in the preview that I was in a trust but verify mode with Florida State. And I trusted what I saw in those first three games, but I just wanted to see what we saw against Alabama, against another team that was going to put up a fight, because those middle two games didn't do anything for you. And this wasn't the answer that I wanted, but I don't think it's the end of the world either. It's just now I feel even more lost because which one was the real Florida State? Was it the team that we saw play against Alabama where outside of a muff punt and a bad first drive, you basically played a flawless game for 3.5 quarters versus the team we saw in Charlottesville on Friday night where you just couldn't get out of your own way? You know, it's kind of like the cartoons or the pranks where you step on a rake and the handle smacks you in the face. Florida State just did that about 30 times on Friday night. They just kept stepping on the rake, and it was like, guys, what are we doing? I mean, my first key to victory in the preview was to play a clean game because that's how you allow teams that shouldn't win games to win, especially on the road when you play bad game. So can you bounce back? I mean, Illinois, again, a team we just talked about, lost by 53 points last week, bounced back and beat a ranked USC team at home this week. So, I mean, it's certainly on the table for Florida State. You know, it's not like you lost by 20. You lost in double overtime and had about 20 opportunities to win this game. You just squandered all of them away. And, you know, talking about winning on the road and how it can be challenging, you could certainly lose Saturday because you're just not the better team. I understand that. But keep in mind, guys, here's something for you. Guess whose first road game is on Saturday? And that's Miami. They're coming into a sold-out Doak Campbell Stadium at nighttime. It's going to be a crazy environment in there. I'm hoping Florida State has kind of that wounded animal that's backed into a corner mindset. And they're going to be overconfident too, because that is one factor that I think Florida State had in this game. I think they were overconfident. Tommy talked about that in his post-game show. Maybe we needed this to humble us. I thought that was something there. I thought maybe they thought they could just roll the helmet out there and win because it's Florida State and UVA. And that just was not the case. They weren't the more physical team. They didn't have the energy. And I think they overlooked them. I think they were looking ahead too. They had game day on the line, a top three rival team coming to town. These kids got social media. We know that. We've seen them talking smack on social media. I think they let their head get a little bit too big after that Bama win. And Miami's doing the same thing. Their players are trash-talking on social media too. So it's kind of funny. Not saying it's going to be the difference, but the spread's about the same. The first road game aspect's about the same. The nighttime is still the same. The kind of overconfidence is this. It is the same situation Miami's walking into on Saturday night that Florida State walked into on Friday night. And again, this is why you play the games, because you just don't know the outcome. And, I mean, certainly Florida State could bounce back. And if you do that, listen, if you bounce back, this loss is going to look bad on your record for the rest of the season. Now, we don't know how good or bad that Virginia team is going to be. They could turn out to be an 8, 9, 10-win team. I mean, if they avoid the hangover at Louisville this week and win that game, that's probably a 9-win team. They might even be contention for Charlottesville, because remember, NC State wasn't a conference loss. So they have a really good offense there. But if you bounce back, yes, you have that loss on your record. You bounce back and beat number 3 Miami at home, you'll be fine. You'll be right back in the running of things, right? You might need some help down the road from a conference perspective, but you'll be fine. So let's dive into this game and what we thought here. But before we do that, if you're going to be in town for that Miami game, make sure you hit up Alumni Hall for FSU gear, because these guys got you covered with some awesome stuff, right? From head to toe, for every member of the family, they got great Noel gear. You can find them at 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or shop online at alumnihall.com. Make sure you use promo code SPEAR, save 10%. Tell them we sent you. You can use that online or in store. So thank you for supporting those guys, and we appreciate them supporting us. So let's talk about some overall thoughts here. Man, I think the reason that I come into this and I say that I'm mad versus disappointed is because Florida State should have won this game, man. We're going to talk about the numbers and why I believe that. This is not to discredit what UVA did by any means. This is not to take away from their win, because they earned it. They deserve the credit for that. But Florida State had so many chances to win this game, and they squandered nearly every one of them. You know, and you also made critical mistakes in critical moments of the game. So it's not even like the self-inflicted wounds were bad. They were bad, and they happened at the worst possible times. And, you just look at the chances to win. You make the field goal. You get the pick six. You make the tackle on the play after the pick six. You run the ball in the red zone instead of throwing it, and it turns into a tip pass interception. You know, you catch the throwback in overtime and don't hit him in the feet with it on 3rd and 3. You don't bobble the last pass to Deuce Robinson there. Any one of those plays could have changed the game for you. I know there was also some ticky-tack calls in this game that went against you that you can't really help either. There was a lot of different things. That's not an excuse. But, man, I mean, when you look at the numbers and you look at the opportunities that you wasted because you had them, you didn't capitalize on them, you can see why I say this. Florida State outgained Virginia 514 to 440. That's plus 74 yards. You had better yards per play numbers, better yards per rush, better yards per pass, better success rate, better EPA, better explosive play rate, fewer three and outs. The turnovers were equal. You had the same number of accepted penalties. You had a little bit more yardage. You had the same number of sacks, the same number of PBUs. They had one more tackle for loss. This is why this game went to double overtime. They were more efficient in the red zone, but you scored more points in the red zone. So the numbers, more numbers lean in the way of Florida State, but again, games aren't played on paper, but you can see why. And it's because you made the critical mistakes at critical times is why you lost this game. Now, don't get me wrong. Florida State wins this game, you know, 38-35 in regulation. Florida State comes back and wins in double overtime. There's still some red flags that you have to address, right? There's still some things that are going to be problems throughout the season that we're going to talk about. So even in a win, it wouldn't have been perfect, but you still got the win. But it was the critical mistakes at the worst possible times that cost you this game. I mean, let's start. The offensive pass interference was on a 3rd and 5. You get a 15-yard gain on a nice pass. You're driving. You're going to respond to them, or you're going to score some points. And now it's 3rd and 20, and you have to give the ball back because you don't convert on the 3rd and long. It's a weak call. You can't help that, but maybe you don't put your hands on the receiver to begin with, or the DB on to begin with, because it just wasn't necessary. But, you know, a ticky-tack call, but you still, it goes against you. You get a block in the back penalty that backs you up on the next drive. Then you fumble it the very next play, give them the ball in plus territory. Then after you fumble the ball, and now they're driving from, I believe, the 38 going in, you make 2 good plays on defense to get them to 3rd and 6, just outside of field goal range. And then Earl Little gets the post play penalty, dead ball penalty, the personal foul. It was ticky tack as well. I'm with you there. It just was unnecessary. You got to be smarter than that, man. In a game like this, on the road at night, you got to be smarter than that. You don't need to be sitting there, you know, playing patty cake in the freaking pile after the thing. There's no point in that, man. Be smarter than that. So now you hand them another free 15 yards and a first down when you had them stopped for a 3rd and 6, where they potentially may have not even hit a field goal. Maybe they hit a long field goal, maybe they don't, but they were not in field goal range, you know, by the little green bar that they put on the screen there. Then you turn around right after that and you respond. Hey, we get them to a 3rd and 5 on that same drive, and Earl Little whiffs on a tackle. And now they're 1st and goal, and they end up scoring. So on that drive, you know, it was a penalty. It was 2 dumb mistakes that ended up costing you a touchdown there. where the defense almost bailed you out from a fumble. Then you throw an interception in the red zone on the next drive, which would have been a big answer. You had gone 10 plays for 70 yards. You had back-to-back 16-yard runs. You were running for 8.1 yards per carry at that point, and we decided to throw it. I just don't understand that. And it was the same type of situation that Tommy got picked off versus Kent State in, where the defensive end just gets his hands up. Tommy's not a tall guy, and he just can't get the ball over him. And so you don't think these teams are keying on that now? They don't know to tell these defensive ends, these pass rushers, look, if you can't get home, block these passing lanes, because now you've seen one turn into an interception and one turn into a tip ball interception. So that's something every team is going to do now. But that was a critical mistake at a critical time. And it would have been an answer to tie the game up at seven. But then you end up letting them go down the field 15 plays, I think 81 yards, and you put yourself in a 14-point hole. All of a sudden, UVA has belief. The crowd's back in it. You know, then the fourth quarter, Juice Cryer misses a tackle in the backfield behind the line of scrimmage on a fourth and one. That would have been a big stop there. UVA ends up getting points on that drive. Then you get in overtime. The easy first down that I talked about on the throwback to Sawchuk. That was not only a first down, that was probably a touchdown, and you hit him in the feet with it. It's just at the wrong times. The very last play of the game, fourth and seven, you're already in a tough spot. Then you get a false start. Now it's fourth and 12. UVA pins their ears back, brings pressure, and it works. And Tommy has to basically heave one to the end zone in desperation because, you know, you're going to lose the game if you don't get the ball, you know, out of your hand anyway. And he's got a guy right in his face. So it was just critical mistakes at critical points. And that's why my number one key to victory in the preview was to play a clean game on the road. That's how you let teams come back and beat you. And so, you know, the other side of that, I do want to say this too, is, man, there was just – Bobby Bowden has talked about this, you know, God rest his soul, where you can have a better team, you can play a better game, and sometimes – it's just the ball's got to roll your way, right? Things just got to go your way. And like I said, this is not an excuse, but you just had some bad breaks in this game, right? I mean, you caught some – or you look at the a couple of weak penalties there that should not have been called, the OPI for sure. That killed a drive. You had the, you know, a couple of things where the tip pass interception, right? How often does that ball just fall right into the defensive end's hands? So that was kind of a freaky thing there. Jerry's missed pick six. Watching it back, I don't think it was going to be a pick six because he was kind of laid out. He did affect the pass. I think it was going to be more of a PBU. He hit the football, and it goes right into the receiver's hands. How often does that stuff happen? You miss an almost dead-on 44-yard field goal. Deuce Robinson bobbles a catch at the end of the game that's in his hands and secures it a foot too late. I mean, there were just so many things in this game that were just fluky little plays that if they'd have went the other way, probably changes the outcome of the game. And so, man, those are things that it just – when those happen and you play a bad game, it turns out for you to lose, right? But even despite all that happening, it was still a double overtime game. And so I think there is some good and some bad to take out of it. So let's start by talking about the offense here. Upon rewatch, I will say that the offense did make some critical mistakes that put you in a hole early on in the game. The first three drives were pretty ugly. Although the third one, you did go 10 plays, 70 yards. You just didn't score because you had the pick down there in the red zone. But then you got it together. You scored on the next three drives. You get the lead back. The offense did plenty to win this game. 35 points in regulation on the road should win you a game 95% of the time. This is not on the offense. There were a few things I didn't love. I didn't love the way we handled the drive before halftime. You went to halftime with a timeout in your pocket. I thought you probably could have made a better attempt to get into field goal range. Not that you would have made it, but I think you had a better opportunity there. Then you missed the field goal coming out of half. And the reason I talk about this is that's that middle eight that everyone talks about. The last 4 minutes of the first half, the first 4 minutes of the second half, and you got the ball to receive the second half. So this was your opportunity to capitalize on that middle eight. Well, when you look at how it played out in those middle 8 minutes, that's when you had the missed PBU by Jerry Wilson that turned into the poor tackling effort by Earl Little, who had a really bad game Friday night. And UVA scored on that. So then you go down and you kind of don't really get super aggressive to try and get in field goal range before halftime. And then you also come out and you miss the field goal. So the point of that, in that middle 8 minutes, you had two drives and came away with 0 points. UVA had one drive and came away with 7 points. That's the difference in the game. And so there was just, again, that's another opportunity that you did not capitalize on. Of course, I already talked about how I didn't like the play calls on the goal line situation. I talked about that. I didn't really like that as well. Again, you were running the ball very well at that time. I think you should have just, it was first and goal, man. Why not at least run it at least two times just to see what happens? You had just broken off back-to-back 16-yard runs. The biggest thing I didn't understand in this game with the offense sometimes was, if what you're doing is working, why not do it until they make you have to do something different? I don't care if I'm an offensive coordinator and I run 80 plays in a game and 80 of them are run plays, but we're running for 8 yards a carry and we win the game, who cares? Georgia Southern upset Florida in the Swamp a few years ago without throwing a forward pass, right? Do what works until they make you do something different. And so that part I didn't understand a whole lot there. Now, I understand you got to mix it up and throw it a little bit. I get that. But what was working was working, and you went away from it. The other one I didn't understand or I didn't like was the call on the 4th-and-1 play. Now, I went back and watched, and I kind of understand why Gus did what he did on this play now, because you had already shown that look two times already where Tommy goes up under center. I think they ran it both times. They faked the pass. Tommy tucked it and ran. UVA knew what was coming. They loaded the box in the middle. They were ready for a run. Now, it's a different conversation whether you want to feel like you should be able to line it up big for big and get 1 yard against that Virginia defense. That's a whole nother question. That's a whole nother conversation. You should have been able to do that, right? But it's not the play call that I don't love, because now that I've seen it, I understand why they did it. It was the personnel that I did not understand in this. I had a clip of the play, but we have podcast-only listeners. Shout out to my friend Patrick, who told me that he'd be like, look here. And he's like, I'm on podcast. I can't look here. So I want to make this make sense to everybody. So I don't have the clip pulled up, but I encourage you to go back and watch it, because it drives me crazy when you talk about this. You had three tight ends on the field to begin with. So you were like in a jumbo package. One tight end was lined up a fullback, and I don't need to see that anymore. But the three players that you were looking at to make a play in this game, which is a massive snap in the game, a 4th-and-1, just a huge play in this game, you had Landon Thomas, Amari Williams, and tight end number 89, Grayson, I don't know how to say his last name, and I don't want to butcher it, so I'm not even going to bother. First off, Landon and Amari are fine, but those are not guys who got a lot of game reps. Where's Deuce Robinson? Where's Randy Pittman? Both of those guys can block as well as those guys. Both of those guys have the size those guys have. Why weren't your more reliable veteran target players in the game? And also, who the hell is number 89? This is the guy, I don't think he's played a snap the entire season. And that's not to say he's not a good football player. Why is he on the field in a critical situation? Because when you watch the play, he faked kind of a lead block and then was trying to kind of block a DB that wasn't even rushing. Amari chips the guy who ends up getting in Tommy's face. And the thing was, the play, if you go back and watch it, it was there, right? If they maybe had moved the pocket, which is something I would like to see them start doing a lot more of, as soon as Landon chips and gets into his break, it's there. If Tommy puts that in his chest, that's a first down. But the guy was in his face, and Tommy, it looked like he kind of panicked a little bit. Number 89 was just, I think he was just happy to be on the field. Landon hadn't turned around and looked yet, so he didn't have time to hit Landon as an option. It was there. It just didn't work, but it was, the personnel on that play was questionable, and I would have liked to seen them roll Tommy to give him the run option, you know, do a flood concept to that side just to have multiple options over there. So I didn't have a lot of problem with anything the offense did. There was just a few questionable play calls, a few questionable personnel decisions, like Jalen Lucas had one touch for 9 yards and only played 3 snaps in the game. I don't know if he was hurt or not, or they just decided not to use him. I don't understand why Keziah Holmes busts off 16 yards per carry on back-to-back runs, and then that was the only 2 carries that he got the whole game. I really didn't understand a lot of that stuff. I didn't really like Gus getting cute with some of the play calling. I think you just stick to what your MO is, the running downhill and the throwing it vertically and stuff like that. The horizontal passing seems to be where Tommy gets into trouble at with the picks and stuff. So, man, but at the end of the day, with the negative stuff out of the way, this offense did plenty to win this game. Again, 35 points in regulation is plenty. And going back and watching this, man, Tommy played his tail off in this game. Was he perfect? No. But, man, he made some incredible throws in this game. He also had a few good runs, 332 all-purpose yards, 3 touchdowns, and even the 2 interceptions that he had, not really on – I mean, the one was on him. It was a tip pass thing. I get that. But the one in the end, that was the last play of the game, was a desperation heave. That's not really on him. And then when you adjust for the drop passes – his completion percentage would have been 69%. So, I mean, again, you're talking about a guy that if it wasn't for a couple of little things here and there, I mean, he had a pretty daggone good game. So I'm not mad at Tommy in the least bit. You know, maybe there's a couple things he could have done different, but they still did enough to win the game. It's just, I think, you know, the two main things with Tommy is I think we have to understand his size. And so you have got to get him out of the pocket to allow him to see these throwing lanes, because he's just kind of can't, it's a risk having him throw over these tall defensive ends. I'd also like to see him kind of cut out some of the sidearm stuff, that low throw angle when it's already coming from a kind of a low spot there. But other than that, I think he played pretty well. I mean, I'm not really worried about Tommy a whole lot there. Deuce Robinson is a legitimate weapon for you, man. 9 catches, 147 yards and a touchdown. They really did not have an answer for him. He caught 75% of his passes, and that's also considering he had a 15-yard-ish, whatever it was, reception call back. So he would have been, you know, over 160 yards there. That's a guy. Him and Tommy's just really seem to have a good connection. That's something that you're going to really be able to leverage going forward. Maybe I would have even liked to see it more of that, but what I'd really like to see more of is the other receiver step up, because right now it kind of seems like Deuce is our ace and everything is like a 10 or below. You know, we don't have a whole lot of other face cards in the receiver deck, and the problem with that, because the other receivers had 9 receptions for 107 yards combined. Now, LaWayne McCoy made some nice catches. Randy Pittman is a really good player for you, man. That 4th and 11 where they saved the game to even get the overtime, just what an incredible play by him as well. So, man, he's a really good guy. The jump pass, you know, that was incredible too. And that's the thing. When I talk about some of this play calling, it wasn't all bad, right? They showed Wildcat on the red zone with Salchuk, worked for a touchdown. They showed it again later with Pittman, touchdown. They brought it back a third time, UVA keyed on it, and you hit him with a jump pass. That's a chef's kiss of a play call. I mean, that was beautiful by Gus Malzahn. That's why you don't get cute in the end zone, man. Run the Wildcat or whatever. I mean, but you get what I'm saying. There was some good, but there was also some bad. But, man, I just think when you talk about these receivers, I just need to see some other guys step up. I mean, LaWayne McCoy's coming along. I really, honestly, if we're being truthful, I need to see more out of Squirrel White. You know, he had 1 catch for 40 yards against Alabama, which was a huge play. And I know he missed Kent State, and I know he's been a little bit banged up. But since then, he has 3 catches on 7 targets for 12 yards. I just need to see more. We haven't seen anything from Javon Boggs. I don't even know if he played in this game. I just need to see more from the room, because eventually they're going to start giving double coverage to Deuce and making you have to throw it to somebody else. So I just need some other guys to step up there. But man, again, Deuce is a major weapon for you. I don't think the running backs looked bad in this game. I mean, Salchuk was pretty decent. I think that Kroma should have got more carries because, man, he's really starting to come on as a running back. He looked pretty good in this game. I would like to see him get more burned, but Salchuk wasn't bad other than the fumble. Kaziah Holmes, again, all you can do is average 16 yards a carry and still not get the ball. That's not on Kaziah. That I don't understand. I also don't think the offensive line played bad in this game, guys. Not upon rewatch. I mean, Virginia blitzed 42.9% of the time. We knew they were going to try and take away the run. We knew they were going to try and pressure Tommy and make him throw the ball. And he was still only under pressure 34.3% of the time. He did get sacked twice, and they had, like, I think 5 hurries. But a couple of them were on Tommy. But at the same time, man, this offensive line didn't play terrible. Now, did they play like as good as they did against Alabama? No. But they still ran for 256 yards. They still averaged 5.3 yards per carry. Out of 44 rushes, 61% went for 4 yards or more. Only 4 went for no gain. So, again, man, I don't put this game on the offense. Yes, they made some mistakes early on that put you in the hole. Yes, you got cute with some of your play calling. But man, they did enough after that first three drives. I think they did enough to win this game, and I'm not mad at them for that. So again, this offense can win you some games going forward, and they're only going to continue to get better, right? They're only, because the more in sync they get, the more experience they get. You just might have to win some games like an old school Big 12 team, right? You just might have to win some shootouts where you rely on your high powered offense and you just hope that your defense can do enough. But I think with the offense right now, I just want to see you get back to your identity. And I would really like to see you just have more guys step up on a consistent basis. And that's the one thing. So the next thing before we talk about the defense here, I want to bring you guys a quick opportunity to get to this Florida State-Miami game. And this is coming from our friends over at The Chief Brief. You guys have probably heard of them. They have a daily newsletter. They do an awesome job with that. I would recommend you check that out and subscribe to it. I mean, they do a great job with a ton of information over there. But we've been talking, and hey, look, guys, they have an opportunity here to win two tickets to Florida State versus Miami on Saturday, a massive game. These tickets are going for like $400-$600 a piece. And so the reason this is interesting is it's not just an opportunity to win, but it only has 1 in 50 odds. So there's only 50 spots for this. I think there's only about 20 spots remaining. Now, it costs $50 to enter, but if you use code PLANTTHESPIRIT, you will get $5 off your entry fee. So for $45, you can get a 1 in 50 chance to win two tickets to Miami. Let's be honest, guys. Most of y'all probably throw $30, $40 a weekend on some high-risk parlays that don't end up hitting anyway. So at least with this one, you got a 1 in 50 chance. So make sure you go check that out over there at The Chief Brief and tell them we sent you with Plant the Spear as the code to save $5. Let's talk about some defense, guys. This is where it's going to get tough. Man, I bet this film watch was not fun for the defense. But I don't put it all on the players. I put this on the coaches and the players for this, because it was just a bad night on defense. I mean, I think the first thing we got to say here is UVA has a legit offense and they get credit for what they did. Chandler Morse had himself a night. You know, this is what the portal does, right? UVA probably can't go get a quarterback like Chandler Morse out of high school. I mean, he was a Lincoln Riley recruit at Oklahoma. He only lost a starting job to a couple of, I think, Heisman candidates or something like that at TCU and Oregon or Oklahoma and stuff. So, but now they got that kind of guy, and that's what the portal does. And so they played a really good game. But with that being said, Florida State did not look very well prepared for this. They didn't really, or at least they didn't trust what they saw. There was a lot of communication issues. Tempo got you a couple of occasions where you just weren't set. You were still trying to get lined up when they're hiking the ball. You also had a couple of instances where guys were filling the same gap because they were just rushing to kind of get ready. And you know, you don't really want that. You don't ever really want two guys defending the same gap, right? Unless that's a called blitz or something like that. Just a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes from this defense. The lack of physicality was surprising. You know, Florida State was catching blocks and letting their players, the Virginia players, hit them and fall forward. That's not something we saw in the first 3 weeks. Something they're going to have to get remedied. Tony White talked about maybe they just didn't prepare them well enough for that throughout the week. And I mean, excuses are great, but it doesn't help you win games on Saturday. So we need to figure that process out, right? So just from the how you played the game, did not look consistent with what we had seen from Florida State, just the preparation, the physicality, and all that stuff. But you do have some red flags that are going to be a problem throughout the season. Now, if you're looking for a positive, if there is one, and I don't know that there is a lot of positive from this defense, but one of the things is, at least with that UVA offense, you did hold them to the least amount of yards and the lowest yards per play numbers that they've had all season. And that was, again, with playing all four starters, all the starters for all four quarters, and they were at home and all that stuff. So I know the defenses they played against before you were not great, but, I mean, you still did the best defensively against them that they've done all season. So if you're looking for, you know, maybe a little bit of sunshine on a cloudy day, maybe that's about it. But I knew this Virginia team was going to score. I predicted them to score 24 in regulation in our preview. I didn't quite think it was going to be 35. But I will say from a positive side, because I want to be positive, you know, I want to be positive too in this. Some of the first half wasn't awful. I mean, Virginia had seven drives in that first half. You got stops on the first two drives. One of them was a three and out. You had an interception to end two more drives. So really right there, four of their seven drives didn't amount to anything. The problem is in the other three, you gave up touchdowns. But their first touchdown drive was on a short field. They only had to go 38 yards, and you gave them 15 of that on penalty yards. So maybe without the stupid penalty, maybe you don't even give up points there. And so this could be a 21-14 game going into halftime. So I don't think out in the first half, outside of the 15-play, 81-yard drive that you gave up, the first half was not bad. It was the second half that was really disappointing, because in that second half, you gave up drives of 75, 74, and 75 drives. You had three 10-plus play drives. You also had four drives over 70 yards. And I think the most disheartening one was the drive coming out in the first part of the third quarter, UVA's first drive. Chandler Morris hurts his hand on the third play there on a pass play, hits his hand on a helmet, and everybody knew they were going to run the ball. I mean, this is what they did the whole drive. 11 plays out of 12 plays for 66 yards were all on the ground, and they went down and scored. Everybody in the stadium knew what was coming, and you couldn't stop it, and that was the hard part. I don't know if it was just like a refusal to adjust, and you know, for me, I would have played so aggressive. I'd have been like, let's see you throw it with a hurt hand and take this away. Because after he got hurt, you gave up runs of 6, 9, 5, 13, 5, 9, 2, 4, and 7. So outside of two runs, everything else was 5 yards or more. Man, I would have made them work so hard to get those runs, or him to throw it with that hurt hand. That was a really disheartening drive, because I think in the second half, you know, we talk about how much they got pushed around and all this, the defense. In the first half, I don't really think it was as bad as I thought it was upon initial watch. The second half, you certainly got pushed around, but the first half wasn't quite as bad as I thought it was. The second half was very disappointing, just from an effort and from a just getting pushed around standpoint, you know, and hopefully that's something that you can maybe get cleaned up. But again, there's some aspects we're going to talk about here in a second that are going to be a problem throughout the whole season. From a game plan standpoint, I think you did play entirely too much soft zone. I think everybody's aware of that. And the problem is, when you're looking at this defense lined up on the field, and you know, and the DBs are 6, 8, 9 yards off the ball more often than not, you're giving Virginia exactly what they wanted, because Virginia didn't do anything special. They did the same thing all night: mesh routes, comebacks, all these little, you know, outside runs, all the little short things they did. It was all because you were giving them space to do it, and you kept doing it over and over and over. And so now, because you're playing that far off, and half the time you're bailing upon the snap anyway, you turn a 1 yard completion into a 10 yard gain on the short passes. And they were like, okay, well, if you're not going to stop that, we're just going to keep doing it. If you're not going to adjust, we're just going to keep doing it. So now you're turning 1 and 2 yard passes. I think Chandler Morris attempts was only like average yards per attempt was like 6.5 or something like that. So it wasn't even a high yards per attempt. You just kept giving them stuff. You kept giving them wide open things. And then not only that, you also couldn't tackle. And so when you can't tackle, you turn a 1 yard pass into an 8 yard completion into a 10 or 12 yard gain. And Tony White even talked about that, about not finishing and stuff like that. And so that was a big problem on the night. That's a problem I had with the scheme part there, because they were killing you with it and you weren't adjusting. So you asked for it. And the crazy thing about it is, there was a few times in that game where Florida State got up in the receiver's face. They challenged the receivers. They played tight press man coverage, or they brought pressure. And UVA did not do well on those plays. So I don't understand why what was working you went away from, and what was not working you just kept doing. And you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting results different times. What an insane game plan, right? I mean, that's the only way to say it, because like I said, when you played press man or you got coverage, when you actually made Chandler Morris sit back and read the defense and push the ball downfield, it didn't go well. And I'm going to share more about that in a second, but it did not go well. So I don't know why we didn't try and challenge the Virginia receivers more often and make them show us that they could create separation. Make Chandler Morris sit back and read that defense while you're bringing pressure and have to push the ball downfield and not do what he wants to do. His game is short passing game. So it was almost like you'd never even tried to take away the number one aspect of their game. Because when you talk about that, their numbers. So UVA was 0 for 5 on passes over 20 yards, and they only attempted 5 of them on the night. That was only 14.3% of their attempts. So they could not do anything downfield. They could not push the ball downfield on you. Now, where they really killed you was on passes of 0 to 9 yards. They did that 51.4% of attempts. They went 17 of 18, had a 94.4% completion percentage. They got you pretty good, 4 for 6 on the 10 to 19. But again, they threw the ball more in that 0 to 9 range than they did any other range, and you just let them have it all night long. There were so many times where they were just exploiting your linebackers on mesh routes and crossing routes. There was a couple of times on the DBs where Virginia ran, I mean, you got to give it to them. They ran a good play call. And like I saw one where Quindarius Jones, his guy, I think it was on a critical third or fourth down too, where his guy comes underneath the tight end and the wide receiver who kind of had a switch release to create some space. His guy comes on the crossing route. Quindarius Jones is 6-8 yards off the ball on a 4th and 3 or a 3rd and 3 or whatever it was. And so you already gave him the room for the first down to begin with. And then you can't get across the traffic fast enough. And all of a sudden, this guy's just running scot-free. So again, man, I don't understand why they did that. Of 35 pass targets, only 5 of them were contested. That's only 14.3%. So that, it blows my mind, man, why they did not try and challenge these Virginia receivers more often by getting in their face. Because I like most of our DBs, so that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Run defense, you allowed over 200 yards on the ground. That was really, really disappointing. But they ran it 41 times. 56% of those went for 4 or more yards. Only 27% were held for 2 yards or less. So, again, man, you got to find a way. But let me say this, too. A lot of that happens when you're lined up so far off the field that your run support is already 6-8 yards downfield. And, you know, when you talk about the way they ran the ball, because we're going to talk about some edge pressure in a second, a lot of the yards that Virginia racked up on the ground came on the edges. It wasn't like they were running the ball up the middle. And again, when you can't set an edge in run defense and your run support is 6-8 yards down the field, you're going to average 5 yards per carry every single time. It's just common sense. And so the lack of adjustment to that, I didn't understand. I don't know for Tony White's aspect. I don't know if it was a game plan thing or an execution thing. It looked like both. Hopefully this is a learning experience for both of them. I'm not a defensive coordinator. I don't get paid millions of dollars to do it. But it didn't make sense to me, right? It just didn't. And whoever's fault it was. And Tony did talk about he was disappointed in the way they finished. Basically poor tackling. Me too. Trust me. I think we all were. Because the tackling was the number one glaring issue. And he talked about how, you know, that's how you get those free yards, those extra yards. You let them fall forward. You miss the tackles. You shoulder tackle. And frankly, if you're tackling like that in week 5, it's a problem. You know, these guys come to tackle somebody like this. You can't hit what you can't see. Pick your head up, put your face in their chest, and grab cloth. This is like high school football stuff, man. I would have had them doing tackling drills from the time the plane landed till the first person threw up on Friday night. That would have been my approach. But, you know, again, I'm not the coach here. But, man, I mean, just the tackling was so frustrating. And it cost you a lot in this game. It cost you a touchdown from Earl Little. It cost you a 4th down stop by Juice Cryer. There's a lot of things that poor tackling cost you in this game. Matter of fact, I would even go as far to say, if you clean up some of the game plan stuff and you don't just give them whatever they want, man, if this team didn't tackle like they were trying to help someone's grandma across the road or something and you wrap up and take people to the ground, we might be a half decent defense. It's something you have to get figured out and fast, because Miami's coming to town on Saturday. You got to play more physical. We already know that. Tony White did talk about how they brought edge pressure with DBs a few times whenever they created a long edge where they would stack players outside of the tackle. The crazy thing was, I saw it on film and it worked. I think that was one of your two sacks was by a DB getting back there and creating pressure. They just didn't do it enough. So the things that you saw that were working, you didn't do enough. And the things that weren't working, you did repeatedly. So that I don't understand either. I think you got to find a way to create pressure. And the reason I'm going to talk about that is because one of the red flags that you're going to have to deal with throughout the rest of the season is, let's be honest, guys, these linebackers cannot cover in space. It just is what it is. In this game, your linebackers that were targeted on passes gave up 9 receptions on 9 targets for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. Juice gave up 3 of 3. Blake gave up 1 of 1. Elijah gave up 4 of 4. And Omar gave up 1 of 1. that's just not going to cut it. It's just a weakness. And you don't think every other team is going to try and expose that? Everybody's going to try and expose that. And that is something that I was like, okay, well, maybe this was just a bad game on the road for Virginia. No, it was not. Against Alabama, those linebackers gave up 9 completions on 10 targets. You have got to find a way to do something with that linebacker group in pass coverage. Maybe that's using a Caleb LaValle, who I know he's a young guy, but he's more of a speedy coverage guy. You know, maybe that's using more of Blake in the pass game or something like that. I mean, I know he wasn't stellar either, but Elijah Herring is we knew this. He was weak in the pass game coming when he came to Florida State. We knew that already, and Juice is not a great cover linebacker. You can't have those two guys with the most pass attempts against, you know, again, because the other teams know that too, and so they're keying on you. You had more pass attempts against your worst pass defending linebackers than any of your other linebackers. You've got to find a way to hide that. And I'm going to tell you how I think they should do that in just a second, because one of the other red flags that you have here is you cannot get pressure with your front three linemen or four linemen, because you know they go 3 or 4 down linemen. You just can't do it. We have not been able to create pressure with these guys. Now, you didn't do bad against Alabama. 19 pressures, 3 sacks on Ty Simpson. You got an edge problem, right? I don't think the interior of your defensive line is bad. I think they're pretty okay. You know, if you understand how what Darryl Jackson's job in this defense is, he's playing well. He's eating up blocks, sometimes 2 or 3 at a time. Now, I'd like to see him win some more of his one-on-ones. I'd like to see him be able to bust a double team every now and then, because UVA's defensive lineman sure was able to do it at least once or twice on the film rewatch. But he's playing okay. I mean, KJ Sampson, I think that's kind of a Grady Kelly 2.0 there. A little bit disappointed there. Kevin Wynn did not play in this game, but if you get him back, hopefully that's a guy that you can do well with there. Mandrell Desir and Deontay McCray, those are both good defensive linemen for you. It sucks that Diamante Diggs is hurt, because maybe he could have been that edge rusher for you. But those are guys to build on. But anytime you have a Conference USA transfer and a 3-star incoming freshman that are 2 of your 3 best defensive linemen, again, we haven't seen withstanding Kevin Wynn yet, that says something about everybody else in the group. But I don't think that interior group is bad. I really don't, man. I don't think they played bad. They just didn't really play great. But the problem is you have an edge problem, and there's no way around it right now. That is the hard part, right? And when you talk about not being able to create pressure, you're also about to go against a good offensive line and a quarterback who they have not allowed over 20% of in any game, they have not allowed him to be pressured on over 20% of his dropbacks. So you're going to have to find a way to get pressure against Carson Beck, which is something that Tony White talked about. You know, again, when you go back to what Alabama did against you, it was a lot of the same things that Virginia did. And so it's almost like you kind of didn't learn from that. Even though you played well in that game, you kept them out of the end zone. You know, Alabama was 1 of 5 on deep passes over 20 yards. UVA was 0 of 5. So you're allowing 1 of 10 on passes over 20 yards against Power 4 defenses. They were 10 of 15, Alabama, on passes of 0 to 9 yards. Chandler Morris was 17 of 18 on 0 to 9 yards. So it's like you're giving up the same thing over and over. I'd like to see an adjustment. You're getting killed underneath. And I think really what this was Virginia had film to prepare for that Bama did not. They saw a weakness that Bama was not smart enough to keep exploiting on that first drive. And Virginia's like, hold my beer. We'll run it until they make us stop it. And you just never did. So I think, I'm not the defensive coordinator, but in my mind, I would like to see if this is how it's going to be. If you can't create pressure on the edge, and your linebackers can't cover in space, I think you need to play aggressive. I think you're going to have to take some chances, and you're going to have to rely on that offense to score some points. To me, if you're going to get killed underneath with these linebackers in coverage, why not send them? Why not send them? Because you can't create pressure anyway. What better are they doing? What better purpose do they serve? To help bring pressure, to not let the quarterback sit back there and pick you apart, or to sit back there and be one of the guys that's getting picked apart by the quarterback who's not under pressure? I think that's an adjustment that you have to make. I would like to see more press man coverage, or at least tighter zones. There's a lot of just lack of awareness where guys are covering zones and they're 5 yards apart, and there's a guy standing right behind them, and they're not even paying attention. You just didn't play zone well in this game. So I would like to see you mix it up a little bit more, man. And you know what? If you're playing tight man coverage and you're bringing pressure, and you just get beat on an explosive play, so be it. You're getting beat on the underneath. You're getting nickel and dime to death anyway. So at least doing it the other way, playing more aggressive, you give yourself a chance to make a big play, to make a splash play, to get a sack, to get a turnover, and things like that. So to me, I'm not the defensive coordinator, but that's an adjustment I would like to see made. Enough of that Ben don't break Adam Fuller bull crap, man. This is supposed to be in a downhill attacking style defense, and that is not at all what we saw on Friday night. So I'd like to see them get back to that. But again, you have some good pieces. Jabril Rawls had a great game. Man, he's a good player for you. Outside of the missed PBU, Jerry Wilson had a good game. You know, maybe we don't go for the strip after that and we actually make the tackle. That would have been smart. But other than that, I think he was pretty good there. Earl Little had a terrible game, but he had a great game the first game. So, man, just come on, Earl. I need you to get back to what we saw against Alabama and not against Virginia. If he can play like that, he's a good player. But, man, he had a bad game Friday night against Virginia. So, again, back to what I was talking about with the edge problem. You have an edge problem, and it is what it is. You're not going to grow a new player on a tree. You're not going to go snap one out of the portal. And I hate calling out guys by name. But man, James Williams is essentially a net negative right now on that field. He does nothing for this defense. He cannot set an edge on a run play, and he's not being really effective as a pass rusher either. I think you need to put him back as a package player, let him come in on long distance downs, maybe third downs, and let him just be a pass rush specialist like he was at Nebraska. Because man, the other thing is, when you talk about the other edge, I don't know if Jason Jenkins is still not healthy. He's not 100% because he only played 15 snaps in this game, and he only played, I think, 24 against Alabama. So he must be on a pitch count. Hopefully he'll be back full speed, full count for Miami, because you're going to need him. But, man, again, you can't rely at this point. You can't rely on James Williams to be your edge setter, because this situation reminds me a lot of Patrick Peyton. To me, he's like Pat Peyton 2.0. He's that taller, slimmer guy, does a lot of unnecessary spins and things like that. He doesn't really have the power to set an edge or to create a dominant pass rush like Jared Verse. You know, Verse would sack a quarterback with an offensive tackle if he couldn't get around him. But it's okay if you want to be like the Pat Peyton, right? Because he was good in 23. The problem is you don't have a Jared Verse on the other side. And when Pat Peyton didn't have that, he wasn't very good. And we don't have that opposite of James Williams. So right now, you got a guy who gets pushed around a lot, a guy who can't set an edge. Virginia ran at him a lot, and there was reason for it. It was smart to run at him because he just gets pushed out of the way a lot. So you have to find an answer there. Now, I thought Jaden Jones looked okay. I thought Amari Williams is a guy that probably needs to see more time at edge than tight end because of where you need the help at. Maybe Diamante Diggs comes back and becomes that guy for you. But right now, number 10 at edge is not working, and you got to find something different. That or he's got to do some soul searching and come out and play a lot better, because, again, most of Virginia's rush yards came on the edges. 62% came outside of the guards. They were running at these edge players because they knew they couldn't set the edge, and they knew you would put your run support 6 yards behind you, which, again, it's like situational awareness, man. Read the room. You know you can't set the edge, so pull up your run support. And then, even then, if you take away the one run up the middle that they scored on with the missed tackle by Earl Little, because you basically had them stopped, that was their longest run of the game for 26 yards. So it's not like he gave up a bunch of explosives either, but 71% of their rush yards came on the edges. And so you have got to find a way to stop that. And yes, it was a little bit disheartening to see them get pushed around in the second half. But again, I do think you have some things you can build on with this defense. I think you have some guys that are playing well for you that maybe just didn't play as good as they could have on Friday night. We'll see how they respond on Saturday. But you got some red flags, man. You got an edge problem, and you got linebackers that can't cover in space. So you got to figure out how to cover those things up. And to me, that only says one thing. Send the linebackers to make up, let both of them just be making up for each other. But what worries me the most, as I get ready to close out my thoughts on the defense here, what worries me the most is this is a lot of what Miami likes to do, and they're going to see the film on Virginia and try to exploit you in the same way. So I'm going to throw a chart up here for you guys watching on YouTube for my podcast only friends. I'm going to make sure that I explain this to you guys so you can understand too, because I was talking to my friend Patrick at the tailgate, and he's like, I can't see what you say when you say look here. So We're gonna make this make sense, but let's pull this up here. This is what scares me about this game on Saturday. Now, I'm still confident in Florida State. I still think we're going to be able to bounce back, and I think they're going to play a lot harder in that game. But this is what scares me, is you're going to be a victim of the same poison that you fell to UVA. So what you're going to see on the left here is the passing chart and the passing distribution of the depth for Virginia on Friday night against Florida State. What you're going to see on the right is Carson Beck's passing chart and depth for the 2025 season. And as you can see, when you look at what we saw on Friday night, everything pretty much falls in this 0 to 10 yard range. You can see here on Friday night, Virginia threw the ball 14.3% deep, 20 plus yards. They were 0 for 5. They threw it 17.1%, 4 of 6 on medium from 10 to 19. 51.4% of their passes came in that 0 to 9 yard range. 17 of 18, 149 yards, and a touchdown, double the yardage of any other down or passing distance on the chart here. 14.3% behind the line of scrimmage, 5 of 5. Now, when you look over at Carson Beck, they throw the ball 15.2% deep, so only about 1% more than Virginia did against you. Medium range passing, only about 2% more here at 19.6, but that short 0 to 9 is where they live, 37.5%, 39 of 42. The bulk of his yards come in that short passing distance. He's also got two touchdowns there as well. Now, they do throw it behind the line of scrimmage more often than Virginia at 24.1%, but it's still, they are taking over half of their passes are short passes, and this is what Virginia ate you up with on Friday night, and that's the exact same thing that Miami's going to try to do on Saturday night. So, daggone it, you better make an adjustment, and you better figure out a way to stop this, or else you're going to get exploited again. So, you know, again, I think Florida State will play much better at home, but you got a lot of the same stuff coming to town on Saturday night that just beat you on Friday night, and you also have a better offensive line, a better defense, and a guy who's not faced a whole lot of pressure. Now, Chandler Morris is more mobile than Carson Beck, but Carson Beck is mobile too. He just hasn't had to run the ball a whole lot because of the protection that he has there at Miami. So, you know, like Tony White said, you're going to have to find a way to get pressure and hit him and finish the drills. You know, I watched so many times on that Virginia film where the defensive line gets push. They just don't finish the drill. They don't affect the quarterback in the backfield. Again, I think of the two sacks, one was a DB, and then I don't know. I think on stat broadcast, you weren't credited with any quarterback hurries, and they had five. So, man, you got to finish when you get in the backfield and hit this quarterback. So, man, you got a lot of things to clean up, but that's really a lot of my top takeaways from offense and defense on what we saw Friday night. I mean, just to kind of round it out here, there were some red flags exposed in this game that Virginia's offense was good enough to expose. You got away with those things against some other teams, and you will get away with those things against some other teams on your schedule. But if you face another really good offense, there's some things that got exposed that you're going to have to figure out how to clean up and fast. If you tackle like you do, you're going to lose a lot of games. But that's things that can be cleaned up. The miscommunications, the poor tackling, because we didn't see that against Alabama. We didn't. It wasn't stellar, but it wasn't this bad. Some guys did. But if you can clean that up, you can clean up some of the communications. You can kind of just get more in sync on the defense. Because, again, I really do believe being on the road at night on a short week in your first road game with a lot of new pieces and a new coaching staff, I think that did play into it. I think you were looking ahead to a lot of things. I think if this does serve as a gut check and you do come out and you play with a fire on Saturday night, I think you can fix those things, right? But you're going to have the edge problem and you're going to have the linebacker coverage problem probably throughout the rest of the season. It is what it is. I would like to see them be more aggressive with tighter coverage and more pressure packages. Those are some things that I would really like to see this defense do going forward, because again, I'm not here for the sitting back and getting dinked and dunked all night. Man, be aggressive. Make some negative plays. Make some explosive plays. I'd much rather see that and get burned on a deep ball or something like that than to just sit here and let this 12, 15 play 70, 80-yard drives, man. I don't think that's the answer. I really don't. But the offense is fine, right? You clean up some of those drive-killing penalties. You take care of the ball. You stop getting cute with your game plans, get back to your DNA, and I think that offense is going to be fine, man. I think they're going to win you some games. I think they're only going to continue to get better. You just got to get this defense to be good enough to help you out in winning those games. And I'm not going to say that this defense is bad. Remember, we still saw what they did against Alabama. We still saw them hold them to 341 yards and 17 points. It's just which one is the real defense now. So we have to see that. And that's we're gonna find out a lot about that on Saturday night, right? You just might have to win some games like an old school Big 12 team, like I said. But man, we're gonna see. You know, if you come out on Saturday night and you play like you did for the last three and a half quarters against Alabama, we can maybe look at that like it was a fluke. Maybe you were playing with your food. Maybe you weren't focused all the way. Maybe it was the short road trip thing like that. We're gonna see a lot of that on Saturday night of who the real Florida State is. And I hope you see more of what the Alabama team, the team that beat Alabama, which, by the way, just went on the road and beat Athens and looked really good, or beat Georgia in Athens and looked really good doing it. So you've got a great win on your schedule, and that win still happened, whether people want to admit it or not. But the Virginia loss also happened too. So we're going to see. But, man, I want to just say this too towards the end here. The season is not over. Ohio State had two regular season losses last year and still won. One of those was to a five-loss unranked Michigan team. UVA is now 24th, and that team, if they don't have a look at or a hangover game against Louisville this week, they're probably going to be an 8-9 win team as well. But you know, you got to get better at going on the road because you still got some tough environments to play in. This does hurt you in ACC play, but you know, again, man, if you come out and you beat Miami, you might need some help down the road from an ACC perspective, but you're going to have two top 10 wins against two good teams and just one kind of blip on the radar against a now top 25 Virginia team. But man, if you win on Saturday, you're right back in this. So there's reason to be disappointed, because let's be frank, man, if Florida State wins that game in double overtime, the red flags are still there. There were still some things to be disappointed in, but your season is not over. Because you know, it's like me and Michael were talking about this. He was out of town this past weekend. That's why it was all me all weekend. And that's why we don't have the All-22, because he gets that for us. He'll be back on Wednesday. But, you know, like he said, we expected to finish September 3-1. And we're 3-1. You're still a top 20 team. The loss just didn't come where you thought it was. And honestly, if you were going to get a wake-up call loss, I'd rather it be against Virginia than Miami. I would, if I had to choose, I'd choose both wins. But if I had to choose, I'd probably rather lose to Virginia and beat Miami than, of course, 100 times, I'd rather than to beat Virginia and lose to Miami. So if you win on Saturday and this was the wake-up call that you needed, the gut check that you needed, the gut check that Tommy talked about in the post-game interview, then it is what it is, man, because look at how Alabama has responded since you beat them. They played like world beaters. So maybe this is what you needed. Maybe a team that didn't know a lot of success got success and they let it go to their head, and now this will humble them and they will go back to being hungry again. You got the extra day to prepare and all that stuff. So, man, I mean, we'll see. You fell 10 spots to number 18 in the latest AP poll. It doesn't really matter. Just go win the games and you'll be where you want to be. I mean, it is kind of crazy that Illinois fell 14 spots when they lost by 53 and you fell by 10 in double overtime to a team that's now ranked. But again, it doesn't matter. Just go win. No game day. It is what it is. They're going to Vanderbilt, you know, the SEC love that they have over there for them. Again, two undefeated teams versus 2-3-1 teams, and one's higher ranked and one beat the other one. One's a rivalry, one's a conference game. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but personally, I'm glad game day is not here, because it's just one less distraction for this team to worry about, man. I want the least amount of distractions, the least amount of spotlight possible. Let's just go out and, man, let's play some daggone football and show that Friday night wasn't what this team is, because I do think they were better than we saw that night. So last thing I have here for you is the Pitt game is going to be at noon. That was announced today. Everybody hates noon games, but you know, hey man, just go win. It doesn't matter what time it starts, just go win. So before we get out of here, guys, that's going to be the last of it. If you're enjoying this, make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. We appreciate you guys rocking with us. I just wanted to come to you and bring you some final thoughts from this game. And so we're going to have all kinds of previews coming up. Like I said, I got a Miami guy I'm recording with tomorrow to give you an inside look over there. So hit that subscribe button. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. It just keeps you full of FSU coverage. coverage, which you're obviously interested in if you're here watching. So we appreciate that as well, guys. And then one last announcement here. I don't know if for those of you that maybe missed it on the post-game show, the instant reaction, we did have fun at the Virginia tailgate. It was a good time up until we lost. We had a great time there, and we're going to be doing it even bigger for the Miami game, of course. So we've got a TV to watch games on. We got an extra tent. We got a lot of stuff coming up that we're planning for this tailgate. We did have a change of location. It's going to be in lot 7, so we have more room to spread out. So, man, make sure you don't miss that. It's free. You can just come by and say hi. We'd love to see all of our listeners. We got a lot of listeners that have become friends. I really, really enjoy catching up with a lot of you guys there at the Virginia tailgate, and I'm hoping to see a lot of you guys at the Miami one. So, man, lot 7, make sure you check that out. And that's going to be it, guys. Make sure you check out Alumni Hall. Make sure you check out our website, plantthespear.com. Like and subscribe. Rate and review on the podcast. And it's Miami Hate Week, guys. We can't get out of here without dropping one of these. So let's go, man. It's going to be a fun week. Doak's going to be rocking. I'm excited. I can't wait to get back down there. And man, it's going to be a good environment, win or lose. Whatever happened on Friday night with Virginia, it's going to be a good game. Florida State's going to play hard. They're going to be ready to go, man. It's going to be a fun one. So make sure you lock in with us, and we will catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.